Good afternoon and welcome to Family First with five-time author and top speaker Randy Rolfe. Your family may be facing a variety of issues that you'd like addressed. No two families in the world face identical problems, but Randy has seen almost all of the difficulties families today face, and she and her expert guests have the answers that you see. Now, here is your host, Rolfe.
Hello and welcome to Family First. I'm your host, Randy Rolfe, and I'm very excited. We're entering our second quarter of our second year with Family First, and we have almost 50,000 listeners every month, so thank you very much. And we're trying to figure out a way to include our listeners as members of Family First. Well, you'll be hearing more about that soon. Today we're talking about keep kids safe on the road, and it's so critical. As our kids are going back to school, they're all excited about the new year and new friends, but their parents are worried about seeing them get into cars. Traffic crashes are the number one cause of death of all people in the world ages 10 to 24, and for all people in the U.S. under the age of 35. That's an amazing statistic. America has lost more lives, over 2 million, in 110 years of driving than all the wars we fought during the last 234 years, starting from the Revolutionary War up to our current military enterprises. So my guest this week is John E. Langan, a highly respected expert on traffic safety and crashes. He's testified in criminal and civil proceedings as an expert in traffic crashes in state and federal courts in Pennsylvania and New Jersey. Langan has been actively promoting traffic safety since 1969. He's founder and president of Drive Aware, which we'll be talking about, a nonprofit traffic safety advocacy and victim support organization. In 1984, he founded and served as first president of the National Association of Traffic Accident Reconstructionists and Investigators. He's also testified before a Pennsylvania government committee on teen driver safety. John E. Langan served for over 15 years as a police officer with the Warminster Police Department in suburban Philadelphia. His assignments included traffic safety engineering surveys, traffic safety educational articles and public speaking, and traffic safety enforcement. He was responsible for reconstruction of serious traffic crashes and assisted the Bucks County District Attorney's Office in prosecutions, including for vehicular homicide. He left the police force after sustaining debilitating injuries, assisting a fellow officer who was physically assaulted by a motorist who was stopped on a tip for the reckless driving. He then earned a bachelor's degree in organizational management from Eastern University and an MBA also from Eastern University. And he's certified in traffic crash investigation from Northwestern University, University of North Florida, and Texas A&M. He's also certified by the Accreditation Commission for Traffic Accident Reconstruction. He's an active member of the Fraternal Order of Police and a volunteer driving safety instructor with the AARP. So welcome to Family First, John. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you, Randy. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great. I know you have so much information. It was a delight to meet you, and because this is such a deep concern with everybody going out on the road, kids getting cars early on. And so how did you first become interested in traffic safety, John?
Well, I'll get to that in one moment, but first I do want to acknowledge you and thank you for this opportunity, and also to thank you for the work you're doing and the show that you're providing and addressing issues that our families are dealing with, because I don't think ever before has there been a more difficult time for the families that were under so much challenges and so many fronts. Never before has it been, I think, as difficult as it is now to raise the child.
I agree with you. I totally appreciate your comments. Thank you. So,
thank you for being a resource, because I think the families need as much help as they can in dealing with that. And to answer your question, as a youngster, I grew up in a ghetto area. I was very poor, and I had divorced parents and an alcoholic father, and I live with my dad, and he made at least one wise decision. He decided that after he had his own crash that he was not going to drink and drive. So he decided he was no longer going to drive.
Mm.
So we'll give him credit for at least he wanted to do both. So
yes.
And as a result of that, I ended up being to driving at an early age, 16, and I had my own car and drove to school and drove him around, drove everything. So And I have my own crash. I have my own crash experience. But even aside of that, I've always aspired to be a police officer. And so that combination led me into safety as well. And then I did become a police officer patrolling in the same ghetto that I grew up in, the only person ever to do so. And I was a police officer. That's when I took it to a new level, because I became responsible for investigating traffic crashes out there when I was a police officer. And they, back then, now I'm talking like 1969, this is before really the advent of personal computers. And they really, the police didn't have the training to be able to properly even investigate a crash. They really, you could have a fatal crash, and it'd be so frustrating there, Randy, to be out there and see serious injuries and fatalities and not be able to really do anything but report it.
Yeah, it was a whole different world just to take a few notes at this scene and no way to really integrate the information and find patterns in the crashes. That must have been
absolutely
really difficult.
I mean, we took photographs and we took some measurements, but we really didn't know what we were – we measured the length of a skid mark, and you knew intuitively the longer the skid mark, the faster the car was going, and the more damage, the faster the car was going. We really couldn't do anything about it, let alone prove it, though, in court. So we knew – the motorist had been speeding, and as a result, the person was killed. But we really couldn't prosecute because we could not substantiate that or prove that in a court of law. So that again, that was very exasperating for that experience. And then about in 1977, they started offering courses in like Northwestern University in traffic crash investigation reconstruction. And I think the first reconstruction course wasn't even offered until 1980. So I was able to get our departments got a federal grant, and they formed a highway safety unit, and we sent officers out there. We had 7 officers that our job was then just traffic duties. And I'll tell you, as a kid, I didn't even really like math, and I flunked ninth grade algebra, and I thought it was cruel and unusual punishment. But when I learned that you say, well, if you took this measurement of the skid mark and then you tested the friction in the road surface, you could tell how fast, and then plugged that into a formula, you could tell how fast the car was going. All of a sudden, I really liked math a lot.
Yeah, that's so true in education. If kids appreciate what the math is for, all of a sudden it's interesting. And so you had a whole turnaround on that subject when you found you could really make a difference with the numbers. That's really a good story.
And that's a good segue into, I think, what this show is really about. And that's like what we're trying to do is to provide some knowledge to your listeners. And hopefully we have the parents out there and the teenagers as well, because knowledge is power, like we just talked about. And when it comes to driving, knowledge is often the difference between life and death.
Yeah, I definitely want to talk about that. So let me ask first, what kinds of court testimonies did you get called to give most often now that you had those analytical tools?
Well, when I was a police officer, obviously I was dealing with all criminal cases in criminal court and prosecution on the prosecution side, prosecuting different violations, whether they are summaries, misdemeanors, or felonies. Vehicular homicides is a felony in cases like that. Or the other thing would I'd be testifying in after I left the police tomorrow, I would be more dealing with civil litigation and working for either the plaintiff sort of defense in the civil litigation. And I still did and do criminal work as well in the private practice. Still do vehicular homicide cases.
So did that, your testimonies get very technical when you could do this kind of analysis? You could tell from the skid marks how fast the car was going and who was doing what?
Again, knowledge is power, because I can tell you from the speed, from the damage analysis and skid marks, et cetera, how fast the car was going. We could also tell from doing the analysis of physics involved in there. We could tell the headlights on or off at the time of the impact. We could tell whether a tire became disabled before, during, or after the collision. If there was 6 kids in the car and they all got ejected, and one was unfortunately killed, I can prove then, but through all that analysis, the physics and the injury matchups and whatnot, and through the trajectories and all, figure out who the driver was.
My goodness. Wow. Yeah, that's critical to be able to tell, to reconstruct, and that's basically what you
call
it. Well,
you can see then, Randy, then obviously if the lights are on or off, that's going to change the culpability of a crash, the liability, 180 degrees. It's going to turn that. Same as a tire. If it blew out and it was a mechanical malfunction that caused it, that's a lot different than the tire that was disabled after the collision. So that, again, changes all the dynamics as far as any kind of charges are concerned. So you can see how critical that was to really get that right. Because obviously, I always took the position that when I looked at, I was at the scene and I had to deal with this horror myself, and we, look at here was a perfectly human, fine human, young human being just going down the road, and within seconds went from being in that condition to being unrecognizable, dead. And that was my responsibility to figure out how that happened. Who's responsible for that?
Right. That must have been traumatic.
It is traumatic, and I took that very personally. And because for years I've been on the police department, I've been there to the scenes of these crashes and seen that, the carnage out there. I've been in the ER rooms and seen the drama inside of there. I've been to autopsies. I've done death notifications. I had to knock on the door and tell parents
that
I was never coming home again.
Oh, that gives me chills.
And I am I'm a parent. I had my own children. So obviously, that took that. Again, I realized this, the magnitude of that. So I always took the respect, and as a Christian and everything, I always believed that I owed it to that person. Because they was killed. Well, obviously they can't tell their side of the story, so I was their voice. So I had to go in there as an instrument of justice too, go in there, put all the pieces of the puzzle together, and to figure out what happened. Because I did not want a guilty person to not be held accountable. Nor did I want, though, conversely though, nor did I want an innocent person to go to jail.
Right, for sure. So you really were pivotal in those situations. So what do you think is the most serious problem for kids today learning to drive? You've seen the worst, and when you reconstruct these accidents, what are the most serious problems that they tend to come up with?
Well, and that's a really great question, and one that gave me gray hair when my children started driving, and I taught them. But I still, like any parent, I have, when they're out there and I hear sirens and they're late, I mean, and even worse, because I have believe a photographic memory, unfortunately. I wish there's things I've seen I wish I could forget, but I can't. And that's why I'm doing what I'm doing here, because I want and here's the other thing. All this horror out there, it's all of it's unnecessary. 99% of crashes are crashes. They're not accidents. They're not, an accident is, it's like a cataclysmic event. You're driving down the road and a gust of wind is up, blows over a tree, knocks it over, and it lands on your car as you're driving down the road. That's an accident. 99% of the time, somebody did something wrong. And usually more than one thing went wrong before the crash occurred. Because you think of your own driving. How many times have you had a near miss when you're driving? If you didn't take evasive action, there would have been a collision if you didn't take evasive action. How many times has that happened?
A lot, yes.
A lot. And that's what I say. A lot of times there's more than one thing goes wrong. So, for example, somebody could come into your lane of travel and you put the brakes on and you steer and you avoid it. But if you were distracted at that time, and you don't see, don't react in time, there's a crash. But as far as the statistics and everything goes, well, you were in your right lane, the other car came into your lane, so it's all their fault. But really, you actually contributed to that because you could have and should have been able to avoid that. So again, this is where it's 99% of these things can be avoided. And to get back to that question about for teens, I believe it's unconscionable to put the teens out there. Their highest mortality group is as a teenagers, and the 16-year-olds are the highest of all. And to put them out there, and we give them, there's three E's to deal with it. There's three E's. It's education, engineering, and enforcement. And that's how we deal with the traffic safety. And as far as the teens are concerned, we are insufficient in providing education, insufficient with the engineering, and insufficient with the enforcement.
Wow, so, that's very serious, and people are dying because of it.
Well, it is dying for that. For your first line of defense is education, then the second is the engineering, then the third, the last is enforcement. And enforcement is really more of a reactive situation than proactive, because you think about it, you drive around, and your listeners are out to relate to this as well. Think about how often do you really even see a marked police vehicle while you're driving around?
Right, it's not that often.
It's not that often. I think the statistics around in the Philadelphia area here, in the suburbs and all of a sudden, you're liable to see one police car. I think the ratio is like one police car for every 10,000 cars.
Wow, that's very small.
Well, it's small, and that's why do you think so many the traffic's driving so fast? It's just because they can. They're not likely to get caught.
So true.
When they do, they get a slap on the wrist, though, there's no real deterrent there for them. So that's the whole problem right there with the enforcement angle.
And I noticed that you do call it crashes. You don't call it accidents. And that's such an important point, that even if something does go wrong, there's many other things that can prevent the worst damage in that case. I just heard about a case where a car sideswiped a truck. The truck lost control, crossed the median, and killed somebody coming in the other direction. And that was an accident as far as the person coming in the other direction. But so many things went wrong for that to happen. The median fence wasn't strong enough. The truck driver maybe wasn't paying enough attention. I mean, it's just a cataclysmic cascade of mistakes.
Right, and that's why you say the engineering. Unfortunately, I mean, we made some tremendous advancements in engineering. And that's great with the airbags and things like that. That's wonderful. But you get, at the same time, then they're counterproductive when they put things out there that, like the GPS screen that causes distraction right there for the driver. And you look at all the other stuff, the different technology that gets in the way of the children as drivers as well. So, back to the three E's. And the first line. A defense is the first E, and that's education. And you got to raise the awareness. And that's what I'm all about, is raising awareness. And again, back to the show, it's so important, because most people don't even know the severity level of traffic crashes. If it's a silent epidemic, if we lost as many people to some virus as we do to traffic crashes, the CDC would declare it an epidemic.
Yes, it's so true. So what would you say is we're coming up on a break, but just quickly, what is the most frequent cause of accidents, of crashes involving young drivers? Is there one thing that stands out, or?
And that's going to be, I'm going to tell you that, it's going to be distraction. It's for all drivers, and it's even more prevalent with young drivers. And real quick, I just want to say the listeners, again, the magnitude of this, that since 9/11, in the United States, we've done how many people have we lost to a terrorist attack? How many citizens have been killed since 9/11?
On 9/11 it was 3,000 or more, but since then, yes, not many.
None. And you know how many people have been killed on our highway since 9/11?
You'll have to tell me.
How about, because close to half a million people, 500,000 people are dead since 9/11.
On our roads. Wow.
And you know how much we hear about terrorism, and that's a real issue. But how much are we really focusing on? How much aware are we as a nation on traffic crashes? And we should follow up after the break about what the UN's doing.
Yes, let's do that. So we're coming up on a break, and listeners, please stay tuned. This gentleman, John Langan, is recognized expert in reconstruction and education about preventing accidents and crashes on the road.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit facebook.com/voiceamerica or search for us at keyword Voice America.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters. Whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance, Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RandyRolfe.com. Your family will thank you.
Hi, I'm Neil Haley, host of the Total Education Network. We're the only education talk show that airs shows 7 days a week on different stations. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org to learn about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide news and provide tips for parents. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org for more information. Remember, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators, TotalTutor.org.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back to Family First. My guest today is John E. Langan, a highly respected expert in traffic safety and crashes. And particularly, we're talking about today about how to keep young drivers safe on the road. And he's just been sharing some amazing statistics for us, that we've lost 500,000 people on the roads since 9/11 you were saying at the break, John, that we have the equivalent of basically a plane crash every day on our roads. Can you go over those numbers?
That's correct. It's equivalent to like approximately 125 people. It's like a major passenger jet crashing every day. And how long would it take before the FAA grounded? If there was a major passenger plane crash every day, how many days would it go before the FAA grounded everything until they got to the bottom of it? We just accept this, and we're making some strides in it, but we're making counterproductive strides at the same time. That's what's so frustrating. I've been dealing with this now for over 40 years, and we like take a step forward and a step back at the same time. We have mixed messages to kids. The kids are confused out there. We tell them, like, for example, we tell them, you have to have a helmet to ride your bicycle, but you can ride a motorcycle without one.
Right.
What sense does that make? You know, and we tell them not, you know, just not to drink. You could drink. We're telling them it's legal to drink alcohol and drive, but you can't be over like a 0.08. Well, nobody knows when they've gone from a 0.07 to a 0.08. So it's very ambiguous, and it's kind of confusing given the signals that they were sending out to them. And that's a message I want to get to the parents too. One of its important things is they not to be a hypocrite. They're modeling because, you know, the old, you know, do as I say, not as they do doesn't work. You tell them one thing and you do another, they're going to follow your model.
Exactly. Yes. So the parents need to behave on the road.
The parents need to behave. Big time. The parents have a huge, huge role and responsibility in this whole preparation for their child. They're putting their children, think about this, their most precious thing in life, their parents and their children. They're now taking them out there and put them in a car, which is, again, here's another paradox too, because the car is one of the greatest things, its greatest joys, its greatest freedoms and all that. At the same time, it's got the potential to become the worst nightmare. Within a second, at all times, just under the surface, as you're having this fun, as you're, like, you know, you're driving around, at any given second, it could turn from a positive, joyous experience into your, a worst, horrific nightmare you can imagine.
Yeah,
and
I know.
Why, and these are, and the only difference between that is the decisions that we make. So that's why it's so important to prepare the parents to prepare the child to help, to talk to the children, to teach them, and to give them the proper education and training and the best they can do, and also the best equipment that they can provide them with.
That's so important. Yes.
Oh my God. Then, there's so many things that they can do that can, you see, you cannot, that's why I got gray hair too, because I know this. You cannot eliminate all the risk out there. It's the most dangerous, think about this. Driving is the most dangerous activity the average person will ever do in their entire life. And we don't even think about it. We go out there and just blow on the radio. We have this cavalier attitude toward it. We forget, in the cars, they're so advanced now, and they got such a great smooth ride. Never before have we been so detached from the actual and disconnected from the actual act of driving and sensing motion because of the engineering. Because we got smoother rides, we got quieter rides. You're not as aware of the speeds. I mean, the older cars, look at 30 years ago, 30, 40 years ago, and even beyond that, the older you go, when you got a car up to 65, 70 miles an hour, whatever, you knew you were going that fast. You knew it. These cars can go 75 miles an hour now, and it feel like an old car was doing 20.
Right. They have the cruise control that they can kind of not even have their foot on the pedals. And now you mentioned distraction as being a main cause of the crashes for young drivers. And have the GPS that they think that's going to guide them, where instead of focusing on the driving, and then we haven't even talked about the distractions of texting.
Let's get into that. That is the number one cause, the distraction. Distraction, and it's all older. It's not just the young ones. The young ones, it's even more of an issue because they don't have experience.
Right.
But for all drivers, distraction is the leading cause. If you're, and here's the thing, we'll get this. If you're on a cell phone, you're four times as likely to get in a crash than if you're not.
That's important.
And hands-free, too. That goes for hands-free. Now,
even when they're using hands-free.
Even hands-free. Now, coincidentally, if you're legally impaired over the legal limit of alcohol, you're also four times as likely to be in a crash.
Wow. So it's
so
the
being
same.
On there, you've now impaired your own abilities by being, if you're on a cell phone or tech, you are driving impaired at that point. You have now impaired your driving abilities. And I always say this, people say, well, it's hands free. Well, how about I talk about to a person in a car? A conversation with a person in the car is not the same as a conversation over a telephone.
Yeah, I often try to explain that to people, that the person's in the car. You're watching out for them. They know you're driving, and talking with someone else. Half of your mind is imagining where they are and what they're saying. And
that's correct. That's a really good distinction you make there. Yes, and the other passengers are also looking. As a matter of fact, they may even see something before the driver does.
Right.
Alert the driver. Meanwhile, someone on the other end of the phone, you come up to a situation, you'll notice too, even if it's a passenger car, and if you're driving along and there's no traffic, nothing going on, they're talking, all of a sudden you come into a congested area, this conversation stops because the passengers shut up because they know that there's now the driver's got to focus, and they automatically shut. Meanwhile, you can have a crisis unfolding and you're on a cell phone and you're still hearing voices coming in your head from the other end of the phone because they don't know what's going on in the car.
Exactly.
And the other thing is this. So I said, well, is that you don't think that's a difference? Okay, then is it all right? Let me ask you this. If you're getting surgery, okay, you're getting surgery, is it all right then for your doctor, your surgeon, to be having a hands-free cell phone call while they're performing surgery on you?
Mm-hmm. Good point. Yes. That wouldn't cut it with most patients.
Yeah. So, And also you should be aware of texting is even worse. Texting, the studies by Virginia Tech University shows that you're 28 times more likely to be in a crash if you're texting.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, sir. And distraction, and to realize it, And that's important to understand these statistics. But what we forget that I think to teach the children and the drivers, I call them children, but they're young adults, the teenagers, they're in between that, still growing from child into adulthood, living at home. But we talk that, we have a tendency to talk down to them and lecture them and we forget to try to communicate with them and understand it. You know, they got some intelligence there. We should appeal to that and educate them and not make them understand it. If they understood more about the dynamics of what's going on, they can make better decisions, not just because, and not have to rail against just being told to do something else and just just rallying against authority. But if they explain it to them and it makes sense to them, they're more likely to buy into it on their own because they don't want to listen. They don't really want to get hurt. They don't know that. That's what I'm saying. We don't give enough information that to put them in a place that they can make a better decision for themselves.
That's such an important point because often kids they'll reject a lecture. They figure, oh, well, my best friend knows how to drive. It's not a big deal. But when you give them this kind of solid information, then they can make intelligent choices and do their texting before they get in the car or before they leave the parking lot. So often I see people getting into the car and turning it on and starting to back out of a parking space and turn on their phone. You can see the color, the blue light, and they're turning on their phone and they put it to their ear. It's amazing how often you see that. They don't do the call while they're in the parking space. They do it once they're moving. It's quite amazing.
Well, and that's a good distinction about it because if they do, then they'll have a tendency to tune it out. They just, and they don't even hear it then. Again, you just work communication is so important. It's a teamwork. It's basically a teamwork. You put them out there. You're preparing the child to go out there and do battle. Again, think about this. Come back to the statistics. We are making improvements because the graduated license, that's a great thing. That's been a huge, improvement right there. Just limiting the number of passengers in there has been made a big difference and is really getting our statistics down. That's a big improvement right there. Unfortunately, with the economy the way it is, people are just driving less. But the good side part of that is our statistics are down just from less miles being driven. So that's helpful. But still, even with lower levels, I think we're even down to like 3,000 a year, just teenagers.
Oh, dear.
Well, think about 9/11, how the horror of 9/11. Like you mentioned earlier, it was like over 3,000. Well, we lose that many every year, just teenagers every year.
Just teens.
Just teenagers. Or put it this way. In 1 year of driving, unfortunately, more teenagers, over 1,000 teenagers, more teenagers die on our roads than all the casualties that we have sustained in the Afghanistan war in 11 years. The longest war in United States history, 11 years. We lose more teenagers, over 1,000 more in just 1 year of driving. And every year, it keeps repeating. There's thousands of teenagers killed every year. And if we don't make changes and make it improve, they'll keep repeating itself.
Yeah, that's amazing. So I think that communication of the parents to the children is so critical. So what other things should they know? Like, it's not just them driving, but getting into the car with a friend or...
That is important. But before we go on to that, I think it's really important just to finish up with some of what the teenagers are confronted with. And this is what they're inheriting out there. You got to remember, the parent thinks back when they were a teenager and 16, you know, whatever that was, 20, 30, 40 years ago, things are not the same. It's much different now than for 16. It's never been more difficult for a 16-year-old or any teenage driver to go out there and learn how to drive and drive in an environment that we have today. Because never before have they had vehicles that are as powerful as they are now and can go as fast as they can now. And never before has the traffic been driven as fast as it goes now. On the roads, it's going. Traffic's driving faster than it ever did. Never before has there been as many cars as there are now. Last year, I think there's more cars registered in the United States now than there is people. First time ever. Never before has there been as aggressive driving going on. It's following too close, lane changing. And never before would you have such a disconnect from the driving sensation. And never before has there been this little margin for error. And at the same time, never before has there been such a great level competing for your attention. So the distraction level is at its highest. The margin of error is at its lowest. You think that's a problem?
Sounds like it would be, yes.
now combine that with, again, now cell phone, texting, GPS, radio, talking, eating, all these different things. Because, here's another thing. Even the average adult doesn't know enough about driving. They don't know about the science of driving. For example, again, this is confusing too. So I've asked you, we're in Pennsylvania, right, Randy? So what's the highest speed limit here in Pennsylvania?
I know that usually it's 55 if it doesn't say differently, but I know some places are 65,
yes,
I think.
65 what?
Miles per hour.
Okay, 65 miles per hour. What's that? What's that mean?
It's a mile a minute.
That's a mile a minute. Do crashes happen in miles in minutes?
No. Good point.
They happen in feet per second. So if you're going 65 miles an hour, how many feet per second are you traveling?
You tell me.
The average person does not know this. Their lives depend on this stuff. If you're going 65 miles an hour, you're going roughly 100 feet per second. So what's the average perception reaction time?
Good question, yes.
It's about 1.5 seconds. That's for your eye to see a hazard, like the brake light's going. You see a hazard, your eye sees it, your mind looks at it, identifies what it is, and decides what action to take, what to do about it. So, for example, to move your foot from the gas pedal to the brake pedal, press down with enough force. So by the time I actually perceives the hazard until the psychological and physiological responses occur and you actually get enough force on the brake pedal to start to slow down, that's about 1.5 seconds. If you're going 65 miles an hour, how far have you traveled?
Yeah, you've already hit the car if you're less than 100 feet away.
Yeah, because that'd be 100 feet, 1.5 seconds, 150 feet, half a football field. You've traveled half a football field, and you have not. Let me ask you this. If you travel at that point, you're going 65 miles an hour, and you see it, and then a second and a half later, when you start to slow down, what's your speed?
Yeah, it's already too late.
You're still doing 65 miles an hour, right?
Right, right.
You haven't
yes.
even begun to slow. You're going half a football field. And 150 feet, you're still going 65 miles an hour. You haven't even begun to slow down. All right, so if you're going 65 miles an hour and the road's dry and it's in good shape, what's the stopping distance for 65 miles an hour?
Right, so it's at least 150 feet.
You know, it's stopping.
Oh, well, no, that's not the stopping. That's when you realize you should be stopping.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a lot longer.
I'm telling you, Randy, you don't feel bad because I'm telling you the vast overwhelming majority of adult drivers could not answer these questions.
Right.
And
I mean, you see people follow
our lives depend on it. And guess what? And what we get by because we have experience. The teenagers do not have experience and they don't have to be able to give the respect to it. They don't understand the science. If they knew more about it, they could figure this out better. So I tell you, it's about 200 feet. So if you go, that's just braking to get to a stop. So you got 150 feet in the perception reaction, 200 feet in braking. You have 350 feet total. That's from
John. We're up on another break, and this is really important stuff. So let's come back to it after the break.
Okay.
We're speaking with John Langan about traffic safety and how we can help our young drivers learn to drive safely.
Learn more. Live better. Voice America Health and Wellness.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun?
Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters. Whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance, Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RandyRolfe.com. Your family will thank you.
Hi, I'm Neil Haley, host of the Total Education Network. We're the only education talk show that airs shows 7 days a week on different stations. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org to learn about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide news and provide tips for parents. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org for more information. Remember, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators, TotalTutor.org.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Ray Rolfe. To speak to Randy, yes, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back to Family First. We're talking about how to educate young drivers to be safe on the road, and we're speaking with John Langan, who was the founder and first president of the National Association of Traffic Accident Reconstructionists and Investigators, and he's testified before Pennsylvania government committees on teen driver safety, and he knows an amazing amount of information, and this show will be archived, and if you have a child that's anywhere near driving age or is driving, do get them to listen to this show on archive, because John's points are really profound and can save lives. So we're just talking about the science of driving and what even lots of adult drivers don't realize, how long it takes for us even to comprehend that there's a challenge in front of us. And if we're distracted, it is even a bigger problem. So can you give a little more detail about that when we took the break, John?
Well, thank you, Randy. Yes, I just want to finish up with that. And just again, so we said it takes at 65 miles an hour from the time of point A being you actually see the hazard to then react to it and then begin brake to it and then actually get stopped. You've traveled over 350 feet, which is from the back of the end zone on a football field at one end to the other, complete other end of the football field and out the end zone of that one. And so that's quite a distance, and it brings into the awareness that at 65 miles an hour, you're going 100 feet per second, and the difference of a crash and a near crash often is like a second. 1 second could be the difference between, boy, just putting the brakes on and going, whoa, that was close, and being scared, or being dead. 1 second could be a difference. 1 second, not saying one Mississippi, could be the difference of you being alive or being dead. And we put our children out there at 16 years old and tell them to go out there and drive and make it every time. Think about this. They're making, as you drive down the road, you're literally just going, making one decision after another as you're processing data and information coming in that you're seeing and hearing and feeling. You're constantly processing all these different information coming onto you as you adapt and react to it. And if you're distracted for even a second or two, it could be the difference between a crash and no crash, life and death. And so therefore, every time you look down at the radio, or every time you look at the cell phone, or every time you turn your head, that could be the difference. There's been people in crashes and dead because I know a brother was in a car crash and killed his brother, drove off the road and hit a telephone pole because there was a bee in the car, and he looked at the bee and he lost his focus and went off the road and hit a telephone pole. And it's like that, little mistakes. That's when it comes to driving. But you may say, when it comes to driving, oops, you're dead. How many other things you do in life that you go, oops, you're dead? Not, I can't think of any. The average person does not do things in their lifetime that if they go, oops, they're dead. When you're driving.
So true. So true. Yes. And, how do you teach, children, young teens to, vet a driver if they're going to be a passenger? So many kids do, they pile into the car and four of them go out to a party or something. What can a parent say to a child to prepare them to be a good passenger, basically?
They have to know that when you're a passenger in a car like that, that every time you do so, you have now taken your life in control of your life, and you've now forfeited it. You've now handed your very life to that other person, and you better hope, you better know them and be able to trust them, because they're literally responsible now for your life.
Right. It's like we think of that being the case when you get in a plane. You know, you're giving control of your life to the pilot and the air controller, but people don't often realize that when they get into a car driven by somebody else.
No, they don't. And it was, unfortunately, it was like 2 years ago, just in my area over here in Bucks County, we had a local school. A young teenage girl had just moved up from Florida, and the very first day of school, and she was in high school, and after the first day, she was coming out, she's walking toward the buses, and the carload of girls pulled up and said, hey, we'll give you a ride. So she jumps in the car, she gets in the back seat behind the driver, and that driver, they go down the road, and it's like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, 2:30, whatever, and they don't even get a mile away to go around the curve. The car, so they're going too fast for the curve. The girl loses control of the car, goes into a yaw, crosses the oncoming lane of traffic, and goes off the road, hits a tree right on just behind the driver's side, right behind the driver's seat, and hits the girl that's sitting there that just got in as a passenger, and she was killed instantly.
Oh, my. Yeah, the stories are so horrendous. I can understand why you're so passionate when you've actually had to see and investigate these kinds of situations.
Oh, and I've done this for 40 years.
And yeah. And I'm
trying to still make this better because I still have children out there. And now I've got grandchildren.
Grandchildren,
so I'm hoping
for sure.
By the time that my grandchildren are driving, and it's a safer environment for them to be out there than it is now because, you know, It's really, again, let me put this in more perspective for you. You know, here again, the threat to teenagers. There are more, put this in perspective. There are more teenagers killed in traffic crashes than by homicide, suicide, and drug overdose combined.
Wow. Yeah, that's something.
So you would want to protect your children from all those things, wouldn't you? Again, now I'm telling you, you want to protect your children. Well, guess what? That driving is the most dangerous thing. That driving is a bigger threat to your children than terrorism.
For sure, yes. So what when you talk about your children and your grandchildren, what do you recommend to parents? Sometimes parents say, "Oh, well, they have a good driving course at the school." That's not enough, is it?
No, it's not. That's good. It's not enough. You've got to be involved. As a matter of fact, in Pennsylvania, most states now too, they have to have some real world driving experience. In Pennsylvania, you have to have 65 hours of training with the parents on the road, and you got to certify that, sign it, and say that you've driven 10 hours at night with them, and also 5 hours in bad weather, which is good. That's an improvement. So that's helpful. But you want to get them the best training. You want to work with them. You want to teach them. You want to learn about them as much as you can. You want to become a better driver yourself and pass that on. But together, make this a joint effort, a team effort between the child. You're in this together. You're on this side. You want safety for the child. You want the child to have fun. You want the teenager to have fun driving. But you want them to balance that out with respect. You can't –
listen, I know all this stuff, and it's like being on a motorcycle. I was a motorcycle cop, and the thing is, you cannot be afraid of a motorcycle. You cannot be afraid to drive even out there. But you can never, ever lose your respect for it. That's when you get hurt. So that's the balance in there. So you don't want them to be afraid, because if they're too afraid, that's dangerous too. If you're afraid and you pass your fear onto them, and they're too timid out there, you're putting them at risk as well. They have to have a nice balance in there that they have the right equipment, the right training, and the right respect for it that'll give them confidence and balance to be out there and keep them on guard at all times, knowing that they're making life and death decisions out there. And one of the things they could do is, and why I say get right equipment, a couple of quick tips. Let them drive the family car. Statistics show that teenagers that drive the family car are in less crashes than if they have their own car. And if they do get their own car, a lot of times parents will make a mistake and they'll give them an old clunker. Well, now great. Now you just give them a car that's more likely to get in a crash than not. And it's also not going to have proper safety equipment in it. It's not going to have the latest state-of-the-art passive restraint systems in it. You want to give them a car that's got the most airbags possible. You want to give them the most protection as possible to compensate for any errors that go on. And the other end of the spectrum, the parents go out there and they spoil the kid and they get them a new Mustang or something, a new sports car, and they could go like a motorcycle. Do you know these cars, these sports cars can go 150 miles an hour? Easy. Motorcycles could go 210 miles an hour. Again, how confusing is that? We tell a kid, you can't go, don't speed. Matter of fact, the highest speed limit in Pennsylvania and in the nation is 65 miles an hour, yet we'll sell there and show them on TV, too. We show them cars being driven fast, driven being reckless. You got also movies, The Fast and the Furious. We're showing them one thing. We're telling them one thing, and we're showing them another thing.
Yeah, that's bad parenting. That's bad education for sure.
And they need to we need to reel that in and balance that out. Now, that's unconscionable. You tell me where you give a teenager a car that can go 150 miles an hour, or a motorcycle goes 200 miles an hour. What do you think is going to happen?
They're going to test it.
I don't even know why they're even allowed to sell a motorcycle and go 210 miles. I don't understand it at all, because that's three times faster than any legal place she could drive it. Doesn't make any sense in my head. And we'll know this. Here's another little thing that I think you should be aware of. Again, I guarantee you, if you ask this question, 99% of the public would fail this question. Tell you this. It's things like this. If I tell you, Randy, if you double your speed, you'll double your braking time. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes.
Okay, that's true. That's a true statement. Now, then you would think, if I tell you if you double your speed, would you think you double your braking distance as well?
Makes sense, yes.
It does make sense. But guess what? It's one of the phenomena that doesn't work out. It doesn't. If you double your speed, you double your braking time. If you double your speed, you quadruple your braking distance.
Wow.
And
that's really
if you
important.
Double your speed, you quadruple your impact force. So if you have a 4,000-pound car, two-ton car, sedan, and you're going 25 miles an hour, you're going to have 150,000 foot-pounds of energy at impact. If you take that same car and take it from 25 miles and go to 50 miles instead of 25, you now have 100,000 foot-pounds of energy.
That's so important. We're coming up on the end of our show already, John, but I want to make sure people can get more of this kind of information.
Tell us
a bit more about Drive Aware, your nonprofit traffic safety advocacy and victim support organization.
Real quick, I just wanted to throw that for testing, they should take their teenager out there, take them to an empty parking lot, and have them slam on the brakes when they're learning to drive. The first time that the teenager's getting the feel for what it's like to make an emergency stop should not be for real.
Good. That's a good point. Emergency stopping practice.
In the snow, take them out there in the snow when it gets snow out there. If you go before, you let them do that. So you want to let them and also get them to practice steering, because a lot of times people get in a panic in a real road situation. They slam on the brake and they forget they have ABS and they can steer. So you want them to get them practice braking and steering in evasive tactics. The other thing is sit down. There's a YouTube video PSA put out over from England. It has over a million hits on it, and it's
the police and everything, they put this together over in England, showing you how quickly it's really very realistic of how a crash happens with texting.
Oh, that's great. That's good to know. So they can find that at YouTube.
Yes, and I'm gonna post it on my blog, and I'm in a speaking contest, and I'll put that on my blog as well. And anybody can go there. I would appreciate it to get a vote, because I'm trying to get this message out, because we raised the awareness, and everybody knows more. See this? If everybody becomes an expert in driving, we'll have a lot less crashes, won't we?
Yes, that'll be wonderful. So give us the exact address of your website and your blog.
Okay, my blog is drive number four safety, driveforsafety.com.
Great.
Or you can get my website is trafficaccidentexpert.com.
Okay, great. And you're available to speak to people,
yes,
about these issues for the education, and you're obviously dynamic and can really get the kids' attention. So I so appreciate all you've shared today about keeping our young drivers from killing themselves and others. This is John Langan, and thank you so much. Drive for safety and drive aware. And keep those kids safe. Thank you so much for joining us on Family First, John.
Well, thank you for having me. And again, I think it's the most dangerous thing, so I think we should at least give them the proper education and equipment to deal with one of the most dangerous things they're going to have to do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much for all your good advice.
I heard it's equivalent. It's like giving somebody a piano lesson and then expecting them to play Mozart.
Exactly, exactly. And this information is valuable for people of all ages as well. So get your friends and family to listen to John Langan on Family First.
We hope you've enjoyed Family First. Please tune in to our program every Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 p.m. Pacific Time. Join your host, Randy Rolfe, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. The weekend is here. Enjoy it with your family. And we hope to see you here next week.